This is Kids These Days.
On this program, we explore issues facing Alaska's kids, families, and the communities where we all live. So today we take on a big problem. We're talking about suicide. Teenagers and young adults in Alaska are more likely than anywhere else in the United States to die by suicide. I'm talking today with three people who can help us all learn more about what's going on and why. We'll also hear from the teen winners of a recent statewide prevention contest. And later in the show, we report on South Central Foundation's Wellness Warriors Initiative. And KTD sits down with the executive director of the Alaska Children's Trust to talk about preventing child abuse and neglect. That's all this hour on Kids These Days. Today on Kids These Days, we're focusing on suicide. We're talking about what's currently happening in Alaska, getting an update on this ongoing epidemic. We'd like to hear from you. You can write us right now at mail@kidsthesedays.org, or you can go to our website, kidsthesedays.org, and post your comments right there. Remember, this is a community conversation, so let's get started. I'm joined today by three Alaskans who each work in suicide prevention. James Galanos is the lead suicide prevention coordinator for the Department of Health and Social Services, Prevention and Early Intervention Services, and he manages the Alaska Youth Suicide Prevention Project. That's a federally funded program designed to create regional suicide prevention teams throughout the state. James also serves as coordinator for the Alaska Gatekeeper Suicide Prevention Training Program and is a member of the Juno Emergency Services Team, providing mental health and crisis intervention services. Thanks for being with us today, James.
Thank you.
Kimberly Jones is the director of Caroline Crisis Intervention, and she's on the phone from Fairbanks today. That's Alaska's statewide suicide prevention crisis hotline, the Caroline Crisis Intervention. Caroline is among the 10% of crisis centers in the U.S. and Canada, which are accredited by the American Association of Suicidology. Caroline is a member of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Network. The Caroline is staffed by Alaskans and is available 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Thank you for being with us today, Kimberly.
Thank you.
And we also have Barbara Franks with us today in the studio. Barbara is Tlingit and is originally from Huna on Chuchikoff Island in southeast Alaska. She's the daughter of the belated Sophie and David Marvin. She's the wife of Mark Franks and mother to son Richard A. Whitcraft. Barbara is the Program Associate for Critical Incident Stress Management and Suicide Prevention Programs for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's Division of Behavioral Health and Rural Services. Barbara Franks also serves as Vice Chair of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council. Thanks to you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, Barbara, maybe I can start with you. You experienced a life-changing event when you lost your youngest son to suicide. He was 23 years old, and he took his life just 2 days before your husband of 25 years died of cancer. And you've said that those losses brought you to seek counseling and that the experience wasn't what you hoped with the counselor and that that led you to some life decisions. I hoped you might be able to tell us more about those experiences.
Well, definitely, because, and thank you for asking that, because it was 6 months after their death, and I needed to try to figure out what I could do after that, you know, because my head was in a cloud, you know. A lot of people weren't talking to me, and I didn't know why, and your self-esteem really goes down at that time, and so I went to the counselor, and she told me, you know, it's been 6 months since their death. Get over it, you know. And I went home, and by the time I got home, I had phone calls left on my machine, and they already knew that I was going to a shrink. That's what they'd said. So
wait, people called and left messages like, I can't believe you're going to a shrink.
Yeah, well, I don't drive, and so I took the bus, you know, and so I was home an hour later. And when I got home, they said, well, you can't take care of your son, you can't take care of your husband, and you can't take care of yourself. And I thought about that for a long time, you know, and I was just really depressed, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And so then at that time, I was working for this gentleman, and he was throwing away a computer. And I looked at it, and I said, whoa, can I have that, you know? And that that began my journey of trying to figure out why my son killed himself, or if I could have any questions, you know. But I know now that those questions will always remain unanswered. And just to try to figure out what other people were doing, you know, to try to, you know, make sense of what was going on, you know, because I had no idea. I had no idea, you know, what was going on in his mind. Mm-hmm. And so it was, even then, it was like a couple years later before I even knew what those warning signs were. And, you know, I think about it now, and I said, that was right in front of my face, and I didn't see that, you know? And it's just like, you know, beating yourself up. And I said, why didn't I see that? You know, because his brother would come and visit his dad face to face and everything, but he didn't want to see his dad. He didn't want to see what cancer was doing to him. And, you know, so when I talk to newly diagnosed cancer patients now, I say, you know, if you have young people around, prepare them that there are going to be physical changes, because he was like 280 pounds and he withered away down to, I think it was 69 pounds when he died.
Oh, my goodness.
And so he'd call his dad, but he did not want to see him face to face, you know. And if you look at the warning signs that people talk about, you know, being depressed, giving away things and stuff like that, I didn't even know that was going on until somebody gave me a Led Zeppelin tape that he gave to them, you know, because he had everything, posters, stickers, t-shirts, everything with Led Zeppelin. And I finally got one back from a friend of his and said, you might want this. And I still have a cassette that I play it on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about this, you know, he loved to be out in the woods, and he liked to cut wood. And so he had wood that he had cut on three sides of the house, and it was 5 feet high and 3 feet deep. Now, to anyone else, you would think that, oh, I'm so proud of him because he's getting ready for the winter, you know. And he had two freezer fulls of meat, and he had to duct tape one down because there was so much food in there. And as a mother, I would say, I'm so proud of my son that he's, you know, providing for his girlfriend and her two kids. And but, you know, when I thought about it later, you know, they're getting their affairs in order. Well, it was like he was saying, I'm not going to be here to make sure that you are warm, or I'm not going to be here to make sure that you have food to eat, you know. And so how creative is that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think about that now, but I had to turn it around, you know. And I was looking at other people's tragedy, you know, like if they died from cancer, or if they had complex diagnosis or something like that, you know. How did they start their journey? So I was reading biographies and autobiographies of what other people did, and I could do that. But I felt like if that counselor was saying that to me, how many other people did she say that to? How many other people stayed down and let that hurt overpower them? So I started sharing what I knew, you know.
Well, thank you for sharing again with us today. And I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Barbara, you just talked about warning signs, and that later you were able to learn that there are some things to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe James or Kimberly or you, Barbara, could tell us all what warning signs are, or perhaps where we might be able to find that information if it's necessary in our lives.
Well, sure. You know, every time I talk to people about suicide, you know, some of the biggest questions they have around it is, or the main question is, why? And when a suicide occurs, we often go back and we search. We're looking for answers. What was happening in their lives? What was some of the circumstances going on that they have led to this? And from my experience, it's been that, you know, we know that people are experiencing pain, you know, deep psychological, emotional pain, and they're looking for relief. They're looking for a way out. And oftentimes, you know, suicide becomes that way out. So it's very difficult oftentimes to predict a suicide in any one person. But we know that we can look for risk factors or warning signs that would lead us to believe that someone may be contemplating or thinking about suicide. You know, one of the biggest ones is if someone's talking about suicide, if they're talking about death or suicide, they're thinking about it, they're writing about it, they may say things to other people in their lives that may indicate that they're thinking about suicide, that they feel like they're a burden to others, that their life is feeling meaningless, that they're feeling hopeless. Those are some of the main considerations that people should really look for if they feel that someone is thinking about suicide or contemplating suicide. So there isn't any one, one formula or any kind of one thing that we would look for to indicate if there would be a risk or an imminent risk. However, you know, we need to look at risk factors and warning signs and see how those are kind of grouped together that would indicate to us if something's wrong. And most of us know if someone's in crisis, if someone's going through something, some kind of experience, or going through some sort of trauma or experiencing a loss, that they're affected. And they need help and they need support. And so, you know, in general, folks would reach out to those that we care about. But in some circumstances, you know, we also hear that there weren't any warning signs, there weren't any risk factors. But those, I think, are more rare. Typically, people, when they do look back and they kind of look at the situation and says, yeah, they were kind of going through some difficulties, but I just wasn't, you know, I had no idea that they would actually try to complete suicide or attempt suicide. And that's why it's really important and one of the things we're learning from our research, if you really feel that someone's at that point in their life where they're, and you think, whether they're telling you or whether you're perceiving this, that they're thinking about suicide, it's very, very important to have that conversation with them, to sit down with them and ask them the question if they're thinking about killing themselves or they're thinking about hurting themselves or if they're thinking about taking their own life. You know, if you really feel that you have that gut instinct that this may be occurring, you know, it's really important to sit down and ask them that. And I think the reason why most people do not ask the question is because it's out of fear. It's out of fear that if they say the word suicide, that it may somehow plant a seed in their mind that they would actually go out and carry out a suicide because we had the conversation about it. And our research tells us that that's not true. And actually, it's the opposite. Oftentimes, it's the lack of someone that can provide a concerned response and be there to listen with them and not try to take their problems away, but just be there to comfort them, to listen to them, to hear their story and try to understand what's going on in their lives.
And Kimberly Jones, you run Careline, and we just heard from James Galanos that sometimes it's very, or maybe always, it's very effective to have there be somebody there to listen when a person is in crisis. And that's what Careline does, isn't that right?
Yes. A lot of our callers call, and they may have friends or they may have family, but a lot of times they call between, you know, work hours, or they may call us at 3 a.m. They may feel kind of uncomfortable, not really sure about talking about it, and that's why we're there. We're not there to give advice or tell people what to do or be judgmental. We're there to listen. And then as part of it, what we might do is come up with some brainstorm ideas, help people cope. A lot of times somebody might call because they're worried about a friend. They might be worried about a text that they got. They might be worried about a family member. And they'll just call us and say, hey, here's what's going on. What do you think? So for us, a huge part of our job is just listening. We get calls 24 hours a day. We also have a website that has a chat feature. So a lot of people are now choosing to chat with us. About 40% of our calls are from people who are at risk of suicide or from people who know somebody who's at risk of suicide. But people don't have to be experiencing thoughts of suicide to call. They could just be having a rough day and just need to call and vent.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that you're using chat through the internet to engage people, and that seems mm-hmm. like kind of a new technology that's maybe focused at a younger group of people. Is that correct?
That's what we're hoping, and that's we're actually seeing youth using the chat line because a lot of people are connected now through texting, through computers, and we really appreciate the feedback that we've had on our website and chat, and we've done some very good interventions just over the chat line. Some people just are not comfortable picking up that phone and making a phone call, but they're sitting at their computer at 3 in the morning and decide to check us out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to mention that in Alaska, people ages 15 to 24 have the highest rates of suicide of any group of age group of people. And I also read that James Galanos, the Alaska Youth Suicide Prevention Project, which you're involved with, I also read that there are particular target areas, regional target areas. Tell me where those are and why there's a focus on those areas.
Well, we've known for a long time that suicide is or we experience suicide throughout the state. So we have to be careful about how we talk about suicide to acknowledge that it happens in Anchorage just as well as it happens in rural Alaska. It doesn't affect any one particular population or group more than another. But research does tell us that we have some pocket areas or areas of concern that we need to pay more attention to. Especially with our rates. We recognize that Alaska Native male teens have significantly higher rates and have some of the highest rates in the world. And, you know, we also learned that among non-natives in our state, we also have particularly higher rates than the general population in the lower 48. You know, older adults are also another risk population, as well as veteran and service members, which is an emerging issue because we're seeing increased rates due to the Afghan and Iraq wars. Also, with just service members in general, we know here in Alaska that we have a high proportion of service members that are active duty, that are also serving overseas. But we are seeing higher rates among those folks as well. So that, you know, it really helps us to understand and learn about the prevalence, and because it helps us at the state level to determine where we need to expend more resources and support in those areas. So with the idea with the Alaska Regional Suicide Prevention Teams, or the creation of those, is that we can help to build coalitions in particular areas that can be a resource for local communities to get help or support for suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm. I think this might be a good time to discuss and to hear some media messages that were recently created by teens. The Alaska Association of Student Governments and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and GCI sponsored a statewide suicide prevention PSA contest. PSA is short for Public Service Announcements, and kids submitted their best attempts at communicating prevention ideas to their peers through video messages. There were 32 entries, and 4 winners were selected. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez talked with 3 of the winners recently. They're from Barrow, Bethel, and Kluwak. Let's hear from them now and get a feel for their work.
My name is Sophie Clark. I go to Kluwak School, and I'm currently a sophomore. Alaska has the highest rate of suicides, and most of the suicides that occur in Alaska are actually teens, and I feel like when somebody older is talking about suicide, it's not as meaningful as when somebody your age is talking to you about it, because, you know, you say, oh, well, they were a teen once, but things have changed and they don't understand. But if it's coming from an actual teen that's going through the same things, it's more personal. It starts with a picture of a little rhododendron.
Freddie here has been at my house for about a year, and to be honest, nobody in my family has a green thumb.
Oh, this plant isn't really doing very good. And then the next part is photoshopped so that the green leaves, there's like 3 green leaves on it, and they really stand out, and they're the only part that's actually colored. And it's saying, you know, this plant is hanging on to life. You should too. And then for the end, there's a really big, beautiful rhododendron. And it says, you know, maybe this little rhododendron with only 3 leaves can turn out like this and have a really great life.
Even if something seems bleak, you gotta tough it out and keep going. If you need help, there's always someone there for you. Just call the suicide helpline.
I just want people to understand that, you know, everybody has a hard time in life. Everybody has problems. Even the people that on the outside look like they're doing really well. And you just gotta stick it out and wait for better times.
Michael White. I am a junior from Bethel Regional High School in Bethel. It starts out with me just standing there with a sign taped to my chest saying, help. And my good friend, Priscilla, walks up and says, how are you doing? And as it goes through it, every question, I answer it how teenagers usually answer, but I have a sign taped to my chest that shows how I really feel. It. Like she asks how I'm doing, and I say, good, and it says, not really.
What's up?
Nothing much, just working on some schoolwork.
And then the ending, it says, see you tomorrow, is what she says. I say okay, but it says probably not across my chest. And the whole point is that it's sometimes people say they're okay, but we have to be able to look for the signs. I've worked a lot with Barbara Franks, talked to her quite a bit, and one of the things she brings up a lot is, could you spare 5 minutes? And that's just something I want teenagers to think. Can you spare 5 minutes for someone that looks like they're hurting? To ask them, are you okay? And go after a real answer, not after a, oh yeah, I'm fine, when they're obviously not. A lot of kids are starting to realize that the best preventative measure is being a friend. Like the Carolines, I think the Carolines should be much more put out there, because that, if you don't have a friend around, that would be the second best thing you could do. Adults can put in all the suicide prevention programs they want, all the positive thinking programs they want, but ultimately, when it comes down to that crucial moment, it's going to take being a friend.
My name is Jaden Nethercott, and I go to Barrow High School, and I'm currently in ninth grade. I wanted to target not the victim, but rather the people around the victim, and kind of what you can do to help someone else. We got first in the suicide prevention video contest. It starts out as a kid who has been bullied and he's about to hang himself, so a little graphic. And then so it's kind of rewinding, and then it shows him getting bullied.
Why don't you go back to your mind?
Dude, what's wrong with you?
Can't you do anything right? Heard your dad beat up that mom.
I'm sorry.
Family is such a waste. Why don't you go back to your mind?
He's walking down a hallway, and a friend comes by him or near him and says,
hey man, you don't look so good. You want to talk about it?
Look around and the other kids that might be looking down or might seem like they're having or they're struggling with sort of life difficulties, that they could go and maybe talk to him or reach out to him.
Those were high school students. The last person we heard from was Jaden Nethercott. He's from Barrow. He was the first place winner of the suicide prevention PSA contest. Before that, we also heard from Michael White. He's from Bethel, and Sophie Clark of Kluwak. Both of those young people tied for third place. And we did not hear from Stephanie Silas, but she is from Cordova and took second place in that contest. And Michael White from Bethel, he actually mentioned our guest today, Barbara Franks, who's with us talking about suicide prevention on Kids These Days. And he says that he learned, Michael said that he learned from you, Barbara, that that if you think about whether or not you can take 5 minutes, it can mean so much. Tell us about that.
Well, that was the change that I had to make in my life because I was really feeling sorry for myself, you know, and you know, walking around in Juneau, you know all these people and everything, but nobody would come knocking on my door to say, let's go and have a cup of coffee or something like that, you know. And so I said, knock it off, because it was bringing me down more and more and more. And the holidays come around and everything, and, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, how dare you get on with your life? how could you do that? You know, don't you know that I'm still suffering here? You know, anyway, I turned it around and I started talking. Like I said, I started sharing what I knew and everything. And so I'd ask someone for their business card. And I have a bowl, and I'd reach in the bowl and I made a game out of it for myself. Here I am sitting in my own apartment, you know, and I got this big bowl that has everybody's business cards in there. And I'd pick someone's card out, and I'd give them a call and I'd say, "Hey, I just thought about you today." And that made them feel good that I took the time to call them, but it also made me feel good that I made someone happy by calling them. And just saying, you know, how have you been and stuff like that, you know, and it would be like a 5-minute chat. And so I wrote a poem about that. It says, "Can you spare 5 minutes?" And I did a whole presentation, "Can you spare 5 minutes?" Because sometimes that's all that person needs, you know, and Kimberly will, you know, attest that, you know. It was kind of interesting that Michael had brought that up, you know, Jordan. We're being interviewed by a newspaper, and I said, "Whoa, somebody was listening to me." You know, that made me feel good, you know, mm-hmm. that that made an impact on him, you know, that that 5 minutes could mean a lot to that person.
A powerful message. Mm. And Kimberly Jones, one of the youth, also talked about how he thought that Caroline was so important from a youth perspective. And that having more young people know about Caroline is something he recommended. Do a lot of people young know about, or a lot of young people know about Caroline, would you say?
Honestly, not enough. I think the word is getting out there. But in my perfect world, every Alaskan youth would know that the Caroline is a safe, confidential, free resource. If they just need to talk, if they need somebody to hear them and listen in a non-judgmental way. Ideally, if they're having thoughts of suicide, they've got other resources that they can use. But boy, if not, we're there.
Well, speaking of talking and listening, you're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm talking with Kimberly Jones, Barbara Franks, and James Galantos. We'll continue our conversation about suicide prevention efforts in Alaska after the break. Also, when we return, we'll find out about a whole health movement taking root at South Central Foundation, and we'll chat with Penu Lucere from the Alaska Children's Trust. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Bones sinking like stones, all that we fall for. Homes, places we've grown, all of us are done for. Places we've grown, all of us are done for. We live in a beautiful world. Yeah, we do, yeah, we do. We live in a beautiful world.
If you're involved with family life, I'll bet you've heard this one before. No one's happy if mom's not happy. So in celebration of Mother's Day, next time on Kids These Days, we're talking all about moms and happiness. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'll be on the phone with Peggy O'Mara, editor of Mothering Magazine next time. Are single moms by choice dangerous to the fabric of society? One poll says a lot of people think so. That's next time, too. Also, kids themselves give us their ideas about how to make their moms happy. And our chef KTD whips up something scrumptious for mom for Mother's Day. All of that and, of course, much more right here on KSKA Tuesday at 2 and then again at 7.
Thank you.
You're here with us on Kids These Days, where today's conversation is about suicide and suicide prevention in Alaska. I'm joined by Barbara Franks of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, James Galantos from DHSS, and Kimberly Jones with the Caroline this hour. We've discussed youth involvement in suicide prevention just before the break, and I wanted to make mention before we run out of time, something I read about results from a recent youth risk behavior survey that I think are really interesting and I would love you all to respond to. In Alaska, I should first say that the youth risk behavior survey is an anonymous survey that students take that assesses some of the behaviors that might be considered risky that they are or are not doing. And in this recent report, it says that high schoolers in Alaska report feelings of depression and hopelessness, and a traditional high school number is at 25%. Students are reporting that they feel that way, and that the number is slightly higher when we talk about alternative high schools, where 37% of kids who attend alternative high schools are saying that they report feelings of depression and hopelessness. And I would, maybe James Galantos, I could start with you if you have any insight as to, I'm wondering what the difference is, like why it is that kids in alternative high schools are maybe feeling more that way than in other more traditional high schools, and then why is that number seeming so high? We're talking about 1 in 4 kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would look at it in terms of looking at the overall risk factors that may be involved or protective factors that would help, you know, mitigate some of the risk behaviors. So you'd have to look at the home environment. You'd have to look at what's happening in the school environment. You'd have to look at the quality of the relationships, what roles they have that maybe provide, you know, meaning and value to them, whether they're using, if they're active substance abuse users, if they have other mental health problems, and what kind of supports are available to them. You know, so you have to look at the quality of those relationships, whether it's their association with their peers or their association with their parents or other adults and caregivers in their lives. These are all mitigating factors that determine that. And what we know about alternative high school, oftentimes kids don't feel like they fit in socially. And I think that's such a strong variable in risk factors associated with suicide, especially between boyfriends and girlfriends. Oftentimes we hear so often that suicide is a result of a triggering event, what we call precipitating or triggering event. And oftentimes those are breakups with boyfriends and girlfriends. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we're learning up to about 90% of those, the suicides are a result of a recent breakup. It doesn't mean that really? Other things weren't going on in their lives. And I think that, you know, that's why we can't just excuse suicide as a result of any one event.
Okay.
So that's why you got to look at the larger picture what are the risk factors or protective factors that create the background story, and then what are some of the immediate things that are happening in their lives that we can observe to know that something's wrong.
I want to talk more about protective factors. I think that this is an idea that you all who work in suicide prevention are very familiar with, but I'm not sure if everybody listening is going to understand what protective factors means and how they play into this whole picture.
Okay, well, protective factors are those things that, whether they're experiences or just based on who we are as individuals, that help support our sense of resiliency. So when we're faced with challenges, we can look to those protective factors, and they can be internal, you know, how I feel about myself or my self-esteem, but they can be also external. What kind of natural supports or other things in their environment that help support them and that gives them a sense of purpose and value and meaning. And so those could be different for different people, but generally we do see protective factors that together we see them as a mitigating factor in helping to support individuals when they're facing problems in their life.
And so they might be things like you were saying, connectedness, fitting in, that kind of thing.
Social relationships. I love what Michael said about, you know, reaching out to a friend. And I picked up on the fact that he said, well, you know, first thing, you'd go to a friend. Mm-hmm. And if not, you would go to Caroline. And I thought that was interesting because I was waiting to hear him say, well, you would go to a parent. But it's really true that oftentimes young people, they don't necessarily go to their parents for support. Oftentimes when they're struggling with issues that they feel their parents don't understand or can't understand. So I think that's also another important thing that's happening, especially with our young people, that they will turn to peers, and that feeling of connectedness with their peers is very strong.
Kimberly Jones, would you like to add anything to the conversation about protective factors?
I think what James said in terms of relationships and connectedness, because that is often something that we see on the care line. A lot of times when somebody first calls and they're struggling, we'll ask them, who do you talk to? Who do you trust? And at first, they may not realize that they have people in their lives they're hurting. And they may not be able to stop and think, wait, there's that coach or my older brother or my buddy. And what we'll do is we engage them, we talk with them, and we help them identify some of their trusted resources. It really doesn't do any good if we tell them you need to talk to this person and that person. But if they say, yeah, I do have somebody that I can trust, that can oftentimes help. But then there are those times where, you know what, they just can't identify somebody that they trust. And then that's where our team at the Caroline gets real creative in helping them build those resources. And sometimes those resources may include professional resources. They may not. They may just include kind of a natural helper. But another thing that we see is people who are worried about somebody else. We're seeing more and more calls from what we call third parties. And just, to me, a general awareness about wellness, a general investment in about relationships and friendships, and like Barbara talks about, just taking those 5 minutes, that is something that really does save lives.
Mm-hmm. I've read that it seems that a sort of recent focus of a lot of prevention programs and organizations is to try to work more together. And I also know that there are lots of tribal organizations that are involved in suicide prevention, and that money from the Recovery Act of 2009 went into funding some of those programs. How does that affect the people who are in need? I'm just wondering, from that ground perspective, how is greater collaboration between organizations that try to help prevent suicide going to help those who need that kind of intervention?
Well, I know that for us at the Caroline, because we're a statewide crisis hotline, being able to refer people back to their supports in their community really does help. When you've got a local suicide prevention program and you can say, have you talked with this program or have you talked with this person, being able to link people up with support groups, whether it's a survivors group or a community action planning for suicide prevention. For us, a big part of what we do is that networking. And realistically, in order to impact suicide prevention in Alaska, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take professionals. It's going to take people from the faith-based community. It's going to take youth, because we are a small state and we inherently depend on one another. So we need to look at it in terms of depending on one another for our mental health as well as survival at 50 below. And, you know, I have to really congratulate the team within the state of Alaska, within the Division of Behavioral Health, for working and bringing us all together, because I've seen a tremendous impact and a very positive impact.
Well, I'd like to thank each of you for coming here today and for doing the prevention work that you each do for all Alaskans. Thanks so much. Kimberly Jones is the director of Caroline Crisis Intervention, Alaska's statewide suicide prevention and crisis hotline. Barbara Franks works with ANTHC's Division of Behavioral Health and Rural Services. And James Galanos is lead suicide prevention coordinator for the Department of Health and Social Services, Prevention and Early Intervention Services. And he manages the Alaska Youth Suicide Prevention Project. Thanks to each of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
At kidstheseDays.org, we will link to StopSuicideAlaska.org, also to the Caroline, and we will link to many of the resources that we spoke about on today's program and make sure that all the intervention information that you've heard here today is easy to find on our website. That's kidstheseDays.org. So far this hour, we've talked a lot about suicide and the myriad ways different organizations are trying to get at education, intervention, support, and prevention. Well, there are other big movements out there that try to address some of the conditions that make life difficult for many people in our state. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative has an ambitious goal: end domestic violence, child sexual abuse, and child neglect in Alaska in this generation. It's a program of South Central Foundation, the native nonprofit healthcare organization for the Cook Inlet region. As Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran tells us, it's all based on sharing stories.
When South Central Foundation CEO Catherine Gottlieb started hosting a group of women from her church at her home, the eight Alaska Native women opened up and shared their stories. It turns out they had one thing in common. They'd all been sexually abused as children, and they'd all been taught never to speak about it. That is just one of the experiences that led Gottlieb to start the Family Wellness Warriors Initiative.
I think about how tribal people chase out the tiger out of the woods or the lion, and they line up with their drums outside of the forest, and they all beat their drums, and it does chase that lion or tiger out of the woods. That's what I feel that we're doing in the state of Alaska. We're all lining up. We're getting our drums together. We're beating out domestic violence, child abuse, child neglect. It's going to stop.
The initiative's trainings are derived from a faith-based program from Michigan, SALT, Survivors of Abuse Leadership Training. It teaches survivors how to be group leaders, taking them through 12 different subject areas using Bible stories and spirituality. A committee here in Alaska attended that training and started figuring out how to bring it here and adapt it. They also needed to figure out how to support people who attended to deal with all the feelings that come from sharing painful stories. The whole program is based on breaking the silence and sharing those stories.
Behind everybody's eyes, there is a story. And the story that you have in your life impacts you about how you relate and what you do and how you live your life. And so if you know that about me, and I know that about you, and you're my provider, we might be able to understand each other better before you diagnose me and treat me for a behavioral problem or a physical problem as my doctor.
So every employee of South Central Foundation attends a core concepts training, and the philosophy behind Wellness Warriors has been incorporated into all 160 South Central Foundation programs. By now, more than 2,000 others have been through a training as well. Rick McCafferty is one of them.
And when I was able to talk more about my childhood story, what was revealed to me is the impact that was having on my family immediately. I had abandoned my wife in a strong way. I'm still married to her. Abandonment meaning letting her make all the decisions. I was a weak man. I hid behind her because I didn't want to make those decisions. And even though I swore I would never sexually abuse or physically abuse my children, my voice was very angry and very controlling, and I abused them in a different way. When I saw that as a man, I wept. And this was probably the first year I was starting to do this with them. And I thought, that's not who I want to be. That's not who they deserve. And so as I learned that I was impacting my family in the way I didn't want to, it made me become a stronger husband and a stronger father to be there for my children and to be there for my wife.
He's now a training specialist for the initiative. When McCafferty first became involved, only 8% of participants were men. McCafferty saw women leading this effort, and he saw how much they needed men to get involved.
What they came up with was a dance called Rise Up Mighty Warrior that Catherine and a lot of the women that are part of this dance to. And so they put on their regalia, they dance to this song, and what you've seen in these women is not just the physical beauty, but the beauty in their eyes and the pain that was in their eyes. And they challenged us men to take back our place as rightful protectors, the warriors that we used to be. And they asked us to rise up, to get involved. And so today we have 47% men answering the call in our conferences, because we've challenged the men, and the men are rising up and want to take their places back.
Some men have become involved in prison. The training is presented at the Palmer Correctional Facility for inmates who volunteer for it. Those who have gone through it have a much lower recidivism rate, 30%, versus the state average of 70%. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is spreading statewide. It's been presented in at least 7 regions. Some regions are involved in a 3-year process to tailor the trainings for their area and put on their own workshops to train more group leaders and community members to support people in their villages. South Central is also revising the curriculum to make it more culturally relevant and developing a new conference that isn't as based in the Bible. Catherine Gottlieb says they are working toward a day when any child who is abused will quickly speak up about it, because they'll find a safe and accepting listener, a safe place to go when they need it. By sharing stories, she says, they're putting abusers on notice. We won't be silent. We are telling. I'm Jessica Cochran.
April is Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month, and while we're approaching the end of April, child abuse prevention is something that merits awareness all year round. One organization that works to support statewide agencies in child abuse prevention is the Alaska Children's Trust. Since it began in 1988, the Children's Trust has distributed more than $3.5 million toward prevention efforts. Sadly, Alaska has one of the highest rates of child abuse and neglect in the country. The Children's Trust works to address that. The Children's Trust believes that parents and community members make the greatest impact, so they aim to engage parents as leaders within their communities. They're doing that through the development of community cafes throughout the state that help establish and strengthen parent-led initiatives. These conversations build on community wisdom and parent voice as ways to impact policy, practices, and action. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez recently spoke with Alaska Children's Trust Executive Director Panu Lucere to learn about the work being done statewide that hopefully will move us all toward their vision of being the safest state for children by the year 2030.
Hi, Panu. Thank you for joining us today on Kids These Days.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Panu, the Children's Trust uses a strategy called the Strengthening Families Strategy, and involved in that are 5 protective factors. Can you explain to us more about the strategy and the 5 protective factors, please?
Well, one of our initiatives is we are partnering with the Office of Children's Services Strengthening Families Initiative, and within that, Strengthening Families are the 5 protective factors. So those 5 protective factors are parental resilience, which means can parents under stress, if they're having problems, can they bounce back without falling apart or resorting to abuse or neglecting their children? The others are social connections. Do they have family and friends who they can rely on when they need or just to support them? Are they knowledgeable of parenting and child development? In other words, are parents knowledgeable of the different developmental stages that children go through, so that they aren't and don't have unreasonable expectations of children? And then there's concrete support in times of need, where if families have the resources when they have problems, or do they have enough food? Do they have the support services they need if they need those kinds of things? So hopefully communities, they can reach out into their community or to their extended family for support in times of need. And the other one is children's social and emotional development. We want children to be able to interact positively with others. And when children do, they are healthy and grow up to be healthy children and adults. So those are the 5 protective factors.
You mentioned earlier that the lack of a good support system can contribute to child abuse, and maybe just feelings of desperation and not knowing what to do or how to be a good parent. And in a state like Alaska that is so geographically isolated and also so big, I'm wondering, what are some of the programs that the Children's Trust is involved in that's helping to address that specific problem?
Well, one of the things the Children's Trust has been doing is we've been promoting under the Strengthening Families Initiative are parent or community cafes. And the community cafe model is one that gives parents the opportunity to talk, to hold meaningful conversations that are questions posed from a strength-based perspective. And it allows parents to come up with possibilities and answers to some of the things they may be faced with, like if parents are isolated. And that, like you said, without social connections can increase the chance for child abuse and neglect if you're isolated and you don't have the resources or don't have those connections. And I can give an example. And in a couple of rural communities, Savunga and Akiachuk, where cafes have been held, the members and community members in Savunga decided that they could make a difference in kids who were out past the curfew. In other words, not getting home on time, probably not getting to school on time because they were staying out late. They formed a mom's patrol. And so in the evening, the moms would go out on their four-wheelers or snow machines or in their vehicles and looking for kids who were out past the curfew and actually taking them home. That's a community-based solution to a problem in the community that came from these conversations, these community cafe conversations about what can we do.
Can you give us an example of a possibility question that turned into something that was effectively working towards preventing child abuse?
Well, one question might be, what surprised me as a parent? And so you break up into small groups and you talk about the question, what surprised me as a parent? So parents would just talk. And it might be one parent saying, well, I didn't know my baby would be doing this. And other parents would offer whatever they have to say about what surprised them as being a parent. From that, you find common themes or threads that are coming out of these conversations. So you find these common threads. And basically, when you hold these conversations, we find out we're a lot alike. And you might have people there are from agencies, and you might have people there who are parents. And when you hold these conversations, parents often think that people from agencies are the experts. And agencies like to present themselves as being the experts, too. We find out we have a lot of commonalities when we start at a human level. So usually the conversation starts out in a dyad conversation, meaning two people talking to each other. And the question might be, talk about a time when you something was very stressful for you. How did you handle it? And so you might be a parent might be paired with someone from an agency, and we're talking about something very personal. We find out we've both been through some very stressful times, and somehow we made through it. And you find out you have a lot of commonalities. And so the conversations are built on strengths and commonalities, and it moves people forward in a positive way.
And also builds community at the same time, I would imagine.
It builds community. Yes, absolutely.
And I noticed looking on the Children's Trust website and through your literature that some of the projects that you fund in Alaska are ones that our listeners will probably be familiar with. We've had Thread on our program before. We've had Best Beginnings on recently. What are some of the other projects or organizations, rather, that the Children's Trust is working with in Alaska?
We have grantees in Juneau, the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center, who has also been doing community cafes. They've been doing them for about 3 years now. They have a father's cafe is one of their projects. They also support parents, new parents. Of course, they have a birthing center. So they are part of their grant is called Strength in Families, and they are helping to support parents of new parents or parents who have newborn. That is one of them. Reach in Juneau also serves families. They serve parents of children who may have disabilities, and that can add a lot of stress to parenting when their children have some sort of disability. Those kinds of families are often more at risk for child abuse and neglect just because it's really can be stressful when you have a child that has a disability. So they are helping to support families with disabilities. The Resource Center for Parents and Children in Fairbanks has a grant that supports our Alaska Parent Line. The Alaska Parent Line is a toll-free number, and parents or caregivers can call and ask any kind of question they might have about parenting issues or if they need resources for parenting classes, or sometimes we get calls about legal issues. We often get calls about the Office of Children's Services. So sometimes it's just referring a caller to a different agency. But a lot of it's, I need help with, this child is doing this and I need help. Or it might be even with teenagers.
That's the Alaska Parent Line. Is that statewide?
It is a statewide toll-free number. Okay. Yes. It's 1-800-643-KIDS. So that's 54371. 800-643-5437. It's operated 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Maybe just to sum up, I think that the Children's Trust has a really great slogan. Can you tell us what it is and why it sort of represents what the Children's Trust is all about?
I think you're talking about kids. You got to love them. Of course, our whole vision is that Alaska will be a place where all children are and families are safe and thriving. So you can't have them if we don't love and take care of our children. And our children really need to be our first priority. We can't have healthy communities if our children and our families aren't healthy and thriving. So prevention really helps, and those protective factors really help to create healthy families and healthy children. And we don't want to wait till children are already being abused. We want to help families become strong and healthy before abuse happens.
Panu, thank you so much for speaking with kids these days about child abuse prevention.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was the executive director of the Alaska Children's Trust, Panu Lucere, speaking with KTD producer Sarah Gonzalez. To learn more about community cafes, the Parent Line, and the other projects funded through the Alaska Children's Trust, visit kidsthesedays.org. We'll connect you to that website there. You've just heard another hour of Kids These Days. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks again to our in-studio and phone guests. James Galanos, Barbara Franks, and Kimberly Jones joined us earlier in the program. Next time, we're celebrating Mother's Day by talking about how you can help keep mom happy and how moms can take the best care of themselves. Mothers and happiness is the topic next time. I'll be chatting with Mothering Magazine's own Peggy O'Mara. We'll also hear from little kids about what they think will make their mom smile. And KTD explores the choice some moms make to be single mothers by choice. Plus, another installment of Chef KTD. Join us for all that next time. Kids These Days had help today from Jessica Cochran, who reported from Anchorage. Our theme music was composed, performed, and produced by Lost Lander. Special thanks to Caroline Willis and partner station KRUA for their help this week. Sarah Gonzalez is our producer, technical director, and web manager for kidsthesedays.org. Check us out online. Read our regular bloggers, that's KTD On The Go, Love and Emotion, and Daddy Dynamic. New essays are posted weekly. You can also find archive programs there for your listening pleasure. All of that and more at kidsthesedays.org. If you want social media alerts from us, you can click on through to our Facebook and Twitter connections there. I'm Shanna Sheehy, your host. I'll see you next time on Kids These Days.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.